A couple of headlines on editorials and news stories caught our eye last week, like this one. Shame on the glutinous bakery union members. Blasted Twinkie killers. And this one. Vulture capitalism, not unions. Kill Twinkies. So which is it? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, November 26th. Hostess Brands received permission from a U.S. bankruptcy judge on Wednesday to begin shutting down. The judge authorized the liquidation process one day after his last-ditch mediation effort between the Texas company and its striking bakers union broke down. 15,000 workers were notified on Thanksgiving Eve that their jobs were being terminated. The remaining 3,200 will stay on to help shut down the properties and prepare them for sale. We will talk with an economist about the demise of Hostess this hour, and we will welcome your questions and views, and we'll wonder whether you side with or against the union in this case. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Michael Rosen, economics instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College. He is also president of the union representing MATC faculty, counselors, and professional staff. Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm good. I hope you had a very nice Thanksgiving and holiday weekend.
I did, and I'm glad to, end it by being on your show this morning.
Well, I'm happy to have you with us again. Why don't you tell us as briefly as possible what happened at Hostess?
I think what really happened at Hostess is a lesson in gross mismanagement of a company. And then following the gross mismanagement and the failure to restructure the company into a profitable operation, the company went back to its employees, represented by a union, for a second time, asking again for major, major concessions. Remember that originally the union workers had given $110 million worth of concessions, and the private equity firm that had purchased the company had only paid $139 million to buy it. In any case, they went back to the workers for another round of concessions. The employees, seeing that none of the turnaround plans had been implemented and that management had instead lavishly increased their own salaries, exhibiting a total disregard for the needs of the business. And I'm not talking about the needs of the workers, but the needs of the business. The workers simply said there's no reason to give more concessions to a management that has not exhibited any concern for growing the business. And as a result, they came to an impasse, and unfortunately, the company's shutting down, and 18,000 workers will lose their jobs.
Yeah. So was this short-sighted in any way by the union? No one wants to give more concessions, especially when they think the company's being mismanaged, but now they don't have a job.
Well, when you say is it short-sighted by the union, I think that you need to think about the fact that the union, when there's a vote that takes place, the union is a democratic organization. 92% of the workers who are represented by that union voted to reject the 30% cut in pay. And let me just document what that would mean. If you go back prior to the first bankruptcy in 2004, these workers made $48,000 a year. Currently, they make about $34,000 a year. If they had accepted this offer, they would be making $25,000 a year. Frankly, I think that they looked at it, and I'm assuming that because they'd already had large layoffs previously, they'd gone from an employment of 30,000 to 18,500, which was another significant concession that they made previously. Most of these workers were senior workers looking at their pensions, and they probably made a calculation that it was more important to save those pensions, which were, over the last few years, the company has not been paying into, than it was to keep a $25,000 a year job.
Yeah, those are massive, massive cuts. then how does the company justify the executives' salaries and hefty bonuses?
I've read a lot in preparation for this discussion, and I haven't found any real justifications. I'm assuming that what they their justification is simply that they have to pay. Which is the normal justification that companies give around exorbitant CEO salaries, is that they have to pay what the market bears. Now, recall that CEO salaries at this company and many other companies, Hostess is not unique in this regard, but CEO salaries are really not set by the marketplace. They're set by compensation committees of the boards of directors. Boards of directors are generally composed of other CEOs and CFOs, who are pretty sympathetic to the compensation needs of their brethren. And so it's not the marketplace that's actually setting these salaries, but rather what you could call crony committees, committees of cronies. And I would assume that that was the case. But just so people know what happened, was while the company was in bankruptcy, annual salaries were doubled and even tripled for CEOs and top executives. And that's hardly an example to set for a company that is trying to lead itself out of bankruptcy and is asking its employees for significant concessions.
We are talking about the demise of Hostess Brands, talking about what happened with a guest who says we shouldn't be blaming the unions for the shutdown of Hostess. And we welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly cloudy with some lake effect snow showers in far north central Wisconsin. Highs today will range from around 20 in the northwest to around 30 in the far southeast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned for a special edition of our State Capitol Report coming up after 7 o'clock this morning. We will welcome in Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker for the first half of the State Capitol Report from 7 until 7:30. He'll answer your questions about his agenda, the state's priorities for next year. And then after 7:30, we'll talk with a political reporter who says it's likely that Republicans will keep political control of Wisconsin state government for a very long time. So that's our State Capitol Report coming up from 7 until 8. Right now, we're talking with Michael Rosen. He's an economics instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College. He is also president of the union representing MATC faculty, counselor, and professional staff. We asked him to join us to talk about what happened to Hostess and whether or not unions are to blame for the demise of the company that made Twinkies and Wonder Bread and other such products. Our guest says it's way more complicated than that, and he says we shouldn't blame the unions. And we're welcoming your questions for him and your views, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Who do you think killed the Twinkie? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Before we take a call, Michael Rosen, I did want to ask, now, what happened on Wednesday is a judge said, all right, you know, mediation failed. The mediation is apparently secret between the union and the company. You're allowed Hostess to shut down. Now what happens?
Well, now what happens is that Hostess will probably attempt to sell its major products, so Twinkies and Ho-Hos and whatever else. I'm not a eater of Hostess products. And in fact, that's one of its major problems was that this was a company that invested virtually nothing in research and development, in the development of new products, and in even in advertising and marketing. It essentially, in many ways, was a cash cow company. And by that, I mean that it had a whole line of products that emerged from the 50s and 60s that we're all familiar with: Hostess cupcakes, Twinkies, Wonder Bread. Well, consumer tastes have changed. We are a much more health-conscious society, and Hostess did virtually nothing to modernize its product line. In fact, when the union made its first round of concessions, which was over, as I said, over $100 million, it was on the premise that the company was going to modernize its product line and its distribution system. Neither was done. There were other problems at the company as well. For example, trucks were breaking down. There were unprofitable stores throughout the country. The company had a problem figuring out how to get inventory to customers. As I said, it had cut back on advertising and marketing. And so this was a company that had all kinds of management problems that it had not addressed. And at the and one of the things that is not as well known is not only did it significantly increase the compensation of its most recent management, but it had had six CEOs in the last 10 years. It's hard to imagine a company that is undergoing that much rapid change at the top developing a restructuring plan that's actually going to return a company to health.
Yeah, and so, Host, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Hostess says they have a number of interested parties. It is likely some other company will at least buy. Maybe somebody else will say, I want the Twinkie, and there will be Twinkie 2 on the shelf.
I mean, they have iconic brands here, mm-hmm. and that's one of the reasons that some people are saying that, you know, it's picked apart by vulture capitalists, is that people, what they mean by that is that investors buy the company. They do that by going deeply into debt, so much debt in this case that the company, when it emerged from restructuring in its first bankruptcy, was deeper in debt, almost 50% more in debt than it had been when it went into bankruptcy. The debt was so large that it was virtually impossible for the company, even in its profitable years, to pay off the debt. The debt continued to grow. And so what the owners will do, which is a private equity firm, Ripplewood, and two private equity firms, two hedge funds, they'll sell off the iconic brands to the brand names, which I'm sure are still attractive in the marketplace. You can see that by when the announcement was made, the rush to buy Twinkies mm-hmm. and Hostess cupcakes and people selling them on eBay and other places, on Craigslist for significant dollars. So that's what will happen. You'll still be able to get your Twinkies. They'll just be made by some other company.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Michael Rosen, economics instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College. We're talking about Hostess and the shutdown of Hostess brands. Mike in Sun Prairie is our first caller. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Joy, and to your guest. When I heard the show come on this morning, I just about flipped out because I've been following this story. I've supported Hostess for many years now, much to the upset of my cardiologist.
Okay.
You know, they're really yummy, but they're not good for us. So on one hand, maybe it's good that they go away, but who's at fault here? Absolutely, this is a management issue, and I know people are going to talk that this is a biased show. You have a union representative on as a guest. I'm with the union. This is no different than the airlines wanting the pilots to all take concessions when the airline hit billions of dollars worth of assets and they threatened to go bankrupt. These guys are going bankrupt now and they're skimming everything off the top like they have for the last 10 years. People have to wake up. We won't as a society. I predict that probably in the next generation, all unions will be gone in this country, and it'll be two or three or four generations down the road, maybe my great-grandchildren, who will say, I've had enough, and unions will come back stronger than ever.
Well, do you think so, Michael Rosen?
Well, I certainly think that your caller has an important point, and that is that our society, our country, is becoming has the greatest rates of inequality that it's seen since the 1920s, and that certainly is related to the fact that the labor, the percentage of the labor force that is now represented by labor unions, is at a historic low of about 11%. But if you subtract out or take out public sector workers, only 8% of workers in the private sector are represented by unions. Let me put that in some context. If you go back to the 1950s, before public sector workers in general were unionized, 35% of all workers in the country were, and those were private sector workers, were represented by unions. What that meant was that even if you weren't represented by a union, you worked at a company that didn't have a union, the unions and set scales and wages and benefits that other companies met. Or to put it slightly differently, wages and benefits as a competitive factor were taken out of competition, and companies competed on different, had to compete on different levels, on style, on service, on performance, etc. Today, so few workers are represented by unions that unions are really not in a position to leverage with companies and increase wages and benefits. And we've seen that in Wisconsin, where even the iconic union unionized companies like Harley-Davidson, Kohler, the workers there have taken significant salary and benefit cuts over the last few years. But the demise of unions corresponds almost exactly with the demise of the or the decline of the middle class and the growth of inequality. It's not the only reason that we've seen a growth in inequality in this country, but it's a major reason. And one of the ways that you can test that hypothesis is by looking at other major industrialized countries like Denmark and Germany, Canada, which have much higher rates of unionization and much lower rates of economic inequality. And so the caller is exactly right that the decline of unions in this country is helping to create serious economic problems.
Let's take a call now from Kyle in Waukesha. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What do you think about this?
Well, I used to work in the semiconductor industry, which traditionally does not have unions. And I worked for a major company, and we started with over 30,000 people at the site that I started at. Today they have about 2,500, and it's all automated. We started making concessions as early as 1999 through 2002, 2005, and 2007. And by the end of 2007, that's when the company went down to 2,500 employees instead of 30,000. Every concession we made, that money was used to build a factory in China, where most of your computer chips are now coming from instead of the United States. There was no union, so you cannot blame a union for that. And so and you look at the money that these people were making, we're talking billions. In one sale of a small group of people from this company, they put $6.5 billion of the company's stock on the market, and our stock went from 157 a share to 13. So anyone who is saying that the unions are causing this is really blind and not looking at what's going on, and it's not bipartisan. It wasn't Clinton who signed the most favored trade status with China, because he did a Brookings Institute institutional look and said this would be crazy. It was Bush who
All
signed
right.
that.
All right, Kyle, thanks very much. So he says this happened to his workplace, and there was no union there. He can't blame the union, Michael Rosen.
Well, I mean, I don't know any of the facts of his circumstance, but I do know that in general, what we've seen for really the last 40 years, going back to the 1970s, has been a scapegoating of labor unions. If you go back to the 1970s, to the early 70s, when mid-70s, when concessionary bargaining really started for the first time in the steel industry and in Chrysler, At Chrysler, both companies were experiencing problems. The steel industry, primarily problems because it had not modernized its production facilities. The steelworkers gave major concessions, premised on the notion that the companies, the United States Steel Corporation at that time, now the USX Corporation, would invest and modernize because both the Japanese steel industry and the German steel industry had become much more productive and efficient because they had been rebuilt after World War II, incidentally, with loans from the United States federal government, and had much more productive and efficient steel production capacity. So the target was put on the unions. Unions made concessions, and United States Steel, rather than investing in modern technology, invested in Marathon Oil because stocks, oil prices were very high at the time. They built a hotel in Disney World or Disneyland, and their rationale for that was that their obligation and commitment was not to make steel but was to make profits, and if they could make higher profits investing in oil or real estate, they had an obligation to the stockholders.
Let me jump in because we're almost at news time, and I wanted to bring up the automation that our caller brought up. We have a Facebook listener, Taylor, who writes, none of the workers really do anything. Everything is done automatically. They stand and watch. That's most jobs nowadays. Most people barely do work worthy of minimum wage. Very briefly, on the workers didn't need to be paid that much money.
Well, on a micro level, that's certainly not true. I mean, it's certainly true that automation is changing the workplace, including the manufacturing workplace. It is not true that workers don't do anything in those workplaces. Their jobs have changed, but we still have welders, we still have machinists, we still have tool and die makers. There is in fact, one of the biggest problems Wisconsin manufacturers are facing is a shortage of skilled workers. At least that's what they claim. So to make the argument that workers don't do anything is absurd.
All right, let me jump in because we have news, and then we'll continue after we check news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Hope you had a very nice Thanksgiving, a good Gray Thursday, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and now here we are on Cyber Monday, when it's expected you will do a lot of your holiday shopping online. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, November the 26th. Coming up in our Monday morning wake-up call, we will hear about cyber criminals and what you should do to protect yourself on this Cyber Monday. That's coming up at about 10 minutes to 7. We continue now with our discussion on the bankruptcy of Hostess Brands and wondering whether or not we should blame the union for this or not. Our guest says not. He is Michael Rosen, economics instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College. We welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's take our next caller, Jim in Lake Geneva. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Joy, Mr. Rosen. I just want to point out that there's a bakery in California, Alvarado Street Bread Company, and it pays its workers $70,000 a year, and they have very low, if any, turnover. Everyone there is very happy, but of course, it's not run in the traditional sense, and you know, the top CEOs and whatnot don't make exorbitant amounts, and you know, it's just good for the economy in general. If the labor force is paid more, there's going to be more money for people available to, you know, do things with their homes and just, you know, be injected into the economy, you know, as far as I feel.
Yeah,
that's actually a point that I was going to make on the earlier caller where he said they should be paid next to nothing, is that our economy, 70% of our economy is personal consumption. And if you drive down the wages and benefits and of working class people and of the middle class, then you're essentially undermining the engine of economic growth in this country. In the most prosperous periods of this country, the 1950s and 60s, when productivity grew at rates of close to 4%, wages, in fact, and benefits, compensation was rising. We had a demand-led economy, and businesses profited, and people's standard of living increased, and the middle class increased. The current model of increasing profits, and corporations are making record profits, by cutting variable costs, that is, workers' compensation and benefits, in the short term is profitable for the companies, but in the long term is devastating for the economy. And we can see that right now as we bailed out banks, private banks, and the financial system, which was necessary to do, but we have not done the same with homeowners who have underwater mortgages, et cetera. And as a result, unemployment remains at about 8%, and the economy is performing well below capacity. You cannot have a successful economy with a rising standard of living if you're driving down the wages and benefits, the compensation of your workers. They aren't going to have money to buy things, and in the long run, that's going to depress the whole economy.
Thank you, Jim. Next we go to Ron in Green Bay. Hello, Ron.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was just wondering, if workers don't like the way the companies run, why don't they just leave and get a different job and put the company out of business?
Well, that's essentially what happened here. I mean, that's a fairly interesting comment. They voted not to accept the concessions, and so the company announced that it was closing. So, I mean, in many ways, what you're describing is what took place. Of course, I think what's behind your question is really the what I would consider the inane free market notion that labor is free to move wherever it wants, and that labor can sell its labor to the highest bidder in a free market. The problem is, in our market economy, there's a power relationship between the supply and demand for labor, as well as an economic relationship. And that power dynamic is that because we always have unemployment, labor never has the kind of leverage, or very rarely has the kind of leverage in the marketplace to negotiate what one would consider a fair compensation and benefits. There's on occasion during major wars or really big economic booms that takes place, like in the late 1990s. But otherwise, labor's at a distinct disadvantage. And so if you are a worker and you don't like your circumstances, exit is not really an option. It's much more, at least historically, it's been much more effective to organize and negotiate with management to get what you deem a fair compensation package.
Should we blame the unions for the demise of Twinkies, Snowballs, and Wonder Bread? We're talking with a guest, Michael Rosen, an economics instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College, who says no. And we're wondering what you think, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think unions killed the Twinkie? Why or why not? And we will talk some, too, about how this story will affect the future of unions. And our next Facebook listener, Richard, writes, the worst management and union mistake in this situation was to not phase out their unsustainable pension system years ago and convert it to a defined contribution plan. What about that, Michael Rosen?
Well, I don't know what his facts are, but it seems to me that in regard to the pension, that was a top concern for the workers. While the pension that they have is guaranteed by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, the guarantee for multi-employee plans like the one at Hostess is limited. And if the plan were to become insolvent, which could have happened if they had agreed to these concessions, many workers would have seen large cuts to their benefits. by saying that they, and so as a result, that is one of the motivating factors for them turning down the proposal to cut their benefits. The movement to defined contribution plans as opposed to defined benefit plans is one of the biggest problems problems in this country for working class people. Defined benefit plans guarantee workers when they retire a fixed sum that they can count on, and so in their last years, after years of service to a company, those workers are guaranteed a certain amount of benefit. Incidentally, one of the things that took place at Hostess is that when, as I said, they had six CEOs in 10 years, every one of those CEOs got defined benefit pension plans. Even if the caller or the person who wrote into Facebook is serious, he should at least be consistent. But really, moving workers to defined contribution plans puts their retirement to the vagaries of the stock market. And as we've seen over the last decade, it almost ensures that working people will not have a secure retirement if, in fact, a secure retirement is part of the American dream. That's problematic. At Hostess, there's not any real evidence that it was the pension contributions that caused this company's economic problems. As I said, this company was plagued by gross mismanagement, the failure to invest in new technologies and new products. In the 1990s, it went on a buying spree of companies. It way over, and it did that by going into debt. And then in the early 2000s, it shed many of these companies. There was no consistent strategy. They ended up way in debt, and to blame it on the workers or their pensions really is not accurate factually.
A listener named Bill emails, why not just raise the price of the product 5 cents? Was that considered, Michael Rosen?
I don't know. I don't know enough about the pricing strategies, and I have to confess, I thought I'd go out and maybe buy a Hostess company.
Hey, they're all gone now, though.
I know. I remember them fondly from when I was a child, but I haven't bought or eaten a Hostess product in probably 20 or 25 years.
Help us understand why the Bakers Union, you know, rejected this call for concessions, but the International Brotherhood of Teamsters accepted it. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the different dynamics are, and I don't know what the pay scales of the Teamsters are, I'm not in a real position to comment on that. I did try to do some research on that, and I didn't find very much commentary in the business press on that. My assumption is that the Teamsters Union, for whatever reason, felt that the deal was one that they couldn't turn down, and that they looked at the job security issue. I don't know what the wages and benefits for the Teamsters were, but I mean the dynamic was that a third of the workers in the company were represented by the Bakery Workers Union, and so when they rejected the deal, management decided to close. As I said, this is really a strategic decision by management on two levels. One, it is to scapegoat the union for the problems that the company's having, and the other is to take its iconic and valuable, economically valuable brands like Twinkies and to try to recoup some of their investment. And that's really their goal. And it's twofold. It's the political aspect is the scapegoating of the union, and the economic aspect is to recoup some of their investment. And it's very possible that particularly the private equity firms may walk out of here having made a profit. The issue of scapegoating, I think, is critical, and we started to talk about it earlier. But for the last 40 years, the problems in the American economy have been blamed on labor unions, intransient, overpaid. I could go on and on with the adjectives. But the fact, as we've discussed, if you look at other very vibrant industrial economies in countries like Denmark, Germany, Canada to our north, they all have much higher levels of unionization. They have, and they are much more prosperous countries. And so the attempt to blame unions for economic problems in the United States doesn't bear up to scrutiny.
We just have a minute to go. Do you think that we will see similar stories in other unionized workplaces in the coming years?
Well, we have. Yes, we have. And that's because I think rather than taking responsibility for their inability to appropriately manage their workplaces, it's easy to scapegoat unions in the current political and economic climate. And so when companies are struggling, and we always see in a free market or a mixed market economy, we always see companies that go bankrupt and companies that prosper, management rather than accepting responsibility for their inability to manage the company or their mismanagement will blame others. And it's easy to blame people down the totem pole, and that's what union workers generally are. I should say that they're the ones that create the value in those companies with their hard labor and their skills. And it's really unfortunate that they're being scapegoated the way they are.
Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for doing some research on this issue on your holiday weekend. We really appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed being here, and good luck to you.
We will talk again, I'm sure. Michael Rosen, economics instructor at Milwaukee Area Technical College. He's also president of the union representing MATC faculty, counselors, and professional staff. Coming up, it's our Monday morning wake-up call here on the Ideas Network. We can expect a cloudy day today, lake-effect snow showers in far north central Wisconsin. Highs will range from around 20 in the northwest to around 30 in the far southeast. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It is time for our Monday morning wake-up call. Are you planning on doing some online Cyber Monday shopping? Well, buyer beware of cyber criminals. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Monday, November 26th. Our guest for the Monday morning wake-up call is Sandy Chalmers, Division Administrator for Trade and Consumer Protection for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Happy Cyber Monday to you.
And to you, too.
So what is the biggest threat facing online holiday shoppers today, or for that matter, throughout the season?
Well, probably the biggest threat is unsolicited texts and emails that will come in and offering these fabulous deals for things that everybody wants, like iPads at a fabulously low price. You're invited to click on a link within the email or text, and you'll be directed to a fake website and prompted to enter personal information, sometimes financial information. So our advice is to never respond to one of those unsolicited texts or emails. It's spam, you know. But the cyber criminals are out there trolling. Even as we speak, I have an email from the FBI with some warnings. So shoppers should really look out for this stuff.
Yeah. So even like on Facebook, you see those now too, sort of, you know, win a free iPad or something like
that.
Yeah,
it's usually iPad. And the criminals use Facebook promotions and contests a lot, and they're all phony. But they're attractive lures, and again, you'll be prompted to enter personal information, and will you win an iPad? No.
No. And of course, these types of problems have been going on for some time now, but I suspect that the cyber criminals are always looking for new ways to try to steal our identity or our account information and so on. Besides the win a free iPad scam, what sorts of tricks are they up to these days, and how are they getting our info?
Another common one at holiday time is a UPS scam, and it'll come again as an email or text and say you have a package and need to fill out the attached form to get it delivered. And then you'll be prompted to enter personal information or perhaps financial information. And, you know, that's what we're really concerned about, because if you enter a credit card number or passwords, you know, you're a victim of identity theft, and that can be quite time-consuming and costly to get straightened out.
Well, let's talk about what we can do to protect ourselves. What are some of the tips that you advise, especially as we maybe start this Cyber Monday shopping?
Well, one really important one is to keep your operating system and antivirus software on your computer and smartphone up to date. As more consumers are using their smartphones to shop, criminals are targeting them. So make sure that your antivirus software is up to date. And then know who you're dealing with. It's easy. Almost everybody has received one of those texts or emails from somebody claiming to be from Best Buy offering a free gift card. They usually appear to be from Best Buy or Walmart. And again, there's a link to click, and you'll be prompted to enter personal information. Well, don't trust an email or text or even a website just based on its appearance. If you want to go to a retail website, you type in the URL yourself. Just be sure not to respond to a text or email.
What about the websites that begin with HTTPS instead of just HTTP with no S?
Well, before you enter personal information, if you're shopping in a legitimate retailer, you're going to want to look for that S, because that denotes an encrypted website, so you know it's safe for you to enter your credit card number.
So we want the S in order to do that.
Right.
Is it safe to say that if we do the shopping and we enter the website and we are, you know, going to the site, then mostly things are okay, but if anybody's contacting us, to don't give them anything?
That's a good bottom line rule, and you know, you hate to be that black and white about it, but legitimate retailers will email you and text you. I mean, that's part of their marketing strategy now. But just to be safe, don't click a link in that website or in that text or email, because you know, that way you know that you won't be redirected into a criminal website.
Well, let's say our best efforts fail us and our identity ends up being stolen and we get fraudulent charges on our credit cards and the like. What do we do then?
Mm-hmm. And you should look at your credit card statements as often as you can. You know, if you're doing a lot of online shopping, it's just a good idea to keep on top of that, your credit card and bank statements. But you should immediately contact your bank or credit card company and let them know what's happened. And there's a lengthy process you can go through to recover your identity, and I won't go through that now, but that's definitely the first step to let your credit card know that you believe that you're the victim of identity theft.
And we didn't even get into just being smart shoppers in terms of price and cost comparison and that sort of thing. But do that too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And check the shipping charges. And a lot of electronics items have restocking fees. So make sure you understand before you press that buy button.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sandy Chalmers, Division Administrator for Trade and Consumer Protection for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, issuing today's Cyber Monday wake-up call. Beware of the cyber criminals. Thanks very much to Bill Mertens, to Cynthia Schuster, and to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.